Of course, you have long given up waiting as a state of mind. So you are not waiting for anything. I talked about the impersonal nature of the pain body. We looked at that. And just as impersonal, really, is the stream of thinking. It's thought. Nobody's personal problem. Well, that's a relief. It's not my problem. The fact that my mind won't stop isn't my problem. It's the human mind. And then it stops, because you've given it space. Let's look at a few questions. I'll start with the smallest piece of paper. It's a short question, so let's go. By dissolving the ego, won't I be dissolving my self-esteem? Do I not need self-esteem to love myself and others? Yes, self-esteem. Many people seem to have a problem with that. Lack of self-esteem. I read a while ago that when the Dalai Lama was younger, he was meeting with a group of Westerners and they were talking about the lack of self-esteem, and he just couldn't understand that, what that was. And they tried to explain it, and then he went around the group and asked everybody, do you have that? And most people said, yes. Oh, it's very strange, self-esteem. Now, the human species is the only species on the planet, of course, that has a relationship with itself, where you have a relationship with yourself. That's normal. But the cat doesn't have a relationship with itself. or the bird doesn't have a relationship with itself, or the tree doesn't. So birds, cats, trees, monkeys, flowers, none of them have a problem with self-esteem. And even the most ugly-looking cat wouldn't have a problem with self-esteem. It hasn't created a secondary, an image self, mind created. And once, of course, that's created, it walks with you, like next to you, behind you, or wherever it is. You always walk with a mental image of me, and you have a relationship with that. And often, you don't like me, the image self. That's poor self-esteem. And then you may be in conflict with it, with the self. You may be talking to yourself in the head and telling yourself something about yourself. Some people talk to themselves in the first person, but many more people talk to themselves in the second person as you. You see? You failed again. You see? You are not as good as. You see? You. Why can't you? And then at times, perhaps the self feels suddenly great about itself. Some people predominantly have low self-esteem, in other words, feel bad about the mind-made image me, feel bad about that, and then realize that some realization comes in when they realize that it is mind-created, and they realize, and usually in the West, it's connected with New Age teachings, and they realize that they can do something about their bad self-esteem, their image. You can actually change your thinking about yourself. First, you discover that the thinking about yourself is predominantly or to a large extent negative. And then, you see, that's a little bit of presence is arising, must be, because you are able to stand back a little bit and watch and see what you are creating with your thoughts. And then the possibility comes of changing your thoughts, your self-esteem, through workshops, affirmations, visualization, and all those practices. And then after a while, that image looks a little bit more comfortable, and you feel more comfortable with that thing walking alongside you. But since everything in form, all mind creations, thoughts, are subject to polarities, you can't walk with a high, continuously, with high self-esteem and feel great about yourself. There's always a polarity to it. And it's usually bound up with what happens or not happens in your life, what feedback you're getting from others. And it is usually comparative. The self-esteem is comparative. How do I rate myself in relation to others? And that gives you the indication of where you are on 1 to 10, or whatever it may be. So self-esteem is mind is connected with the mind-made me, lack of it, or in good self-esteem, but it exists within polarities. Even if you spent a whole year affirming continuously that I love myself, I love myself, and maybe until now you hated yourself. And your house is full of little stickers. And wherever you look, you see, I love myself. And you look in the mirror and look into your eyes and repeat that, I love myself. To some extent, it works. To some extent. You have a better relationship with yourself. But there's always a downside. It's hard to sustain that because the other polarity will manifest also in your life. And you go through life when, in order to know how you feel about yourself, you need to compare yourself with others. And then you say, oh, I'm actually better looking than this person. So I actually feel quite good about myself. I'm actually much more educated than that person. I feel good about, or whatever you can get. Well, this person is ill and I'm healthy, so that's good. So you need, for self-esteem, if you look, you need relativity. And you need comparison. And ego is always comparing itself. Is it possible to live without having a relationship with yourself? Neither good nor bad. Is it possible to be so completely yourself that the mind-made image of me dissolves? Yes, this is why we're here. This is the essence of our gathering. The mind-made image is connected to thought, to continuous thinking. It's fueled by, perpetuated by, upheld by the continuous thought processes, many of which are about me and myself. And so I have through thought, I have a relationship with a thought-made entity, which sometimes feels quite comfortable and sometimes feels not pleasant, don't want to live with that person. And of course it's true, many people live with a self that is very unpleasant, that creates a lot of trouble, a lot of problems, a lot of suffering, that continuously criticizes them, that continuously blames them, that continuously tells them they're not enough. And they live with that entity, mind-made, conditioned mind movements, conditioned in such a way that they attack you continuously, and that's the self that they have a relationship with. They would never live with a person like that. You would run out of the room. You couldn't live with a person for more than a day. Somebody you live with did that to you, what your self-image is doing to you through thought, you would have filed for divorce long ago. But you can't do that with that because it's your own the mind. It walks with you. And there you have this complaining and whining and accusing and, oh, get away. And a large part of that is because you're identified with thought. There isn't the ability to step back from thought and watch thought. Watch that. And here, the mind-made entity, because that self that you have a relationship with is part of the story-based self, the me. That was the self that I had a very unpleasant relationship with for many years. I had a very extremely painful relationship with myself. I couldn't live with myself anymore. And so I somehow said, that's it. I can't live with it anymore. That's it. But that was so total that I no longer sustained, fueled the self through thought. I didn't know anything about it. Mind-made image dissolved. The self that I couldn't live with, that was so heavy, dissolved. And what was left was simply I. So the I shifted from, whereas before when I said I was referring to myself, the unhappy, dense I, the story-based I, that dissolved. And then the true I emerged, had always been there. Presence, I am. Nothing in particular anymore, a simple sense of presence or beingness. And for the first time I could walk and be without having a relationship with myself. And that there is something so precious in that I or presence. So, it's beyond words, you could say. It's like a diamond. It's something extremely, very, very precious. That's why perhaps Buddhism sometimes has the image of a diamond. But this is not comparative. It's not a sense of that deepest self, not the mind-made self, is so precious that it knows itself to be that in a non-dualistic way without needing to compare itself to others. It has nothing to do with the form or any mind form. So as presence arises, you don't need self-esteem anymore, you don't depend on that anymore. Because what dissolves is the mind-made entity with which you have a relationship. And it's so self-esteem is an intermediate thing that for a little while makes your life more pleasant. It's fine. And then after a while you see the unsatisfactory nature even of that, because you cannot uphold continuous self-esteem. It's hard work, all these affirmations. And then things come into your life that tell you the opposite, inevitably, sooner or later. So then suddenly you don't love yourself anymore, nor do you hate yourself, because there's no self to love. There's simply the state of this, which is love. It emanates. But you don't create a fiction that now you have a good relationship and love. So that is moving beyond self-esteem. And now we see why the Dalai Lama couldn't understand. He only learned about that concept when he met Westerners who have a highly developed mind and ego. Not others also have ego, but even more developed in the West, perhaps. But he was surrounded perhaps by monks and not quite as highly developed mental image. And perhaps he himself maybe never had it, or I don't know. But anyway, it was new to him, self-esteem. How strange. And I write about it in the book. There's a little paragraph on that. The end of having a relationship with yourself. Ah. You don't need to arrange certain thoughts in your head that you feel good about it. So self-esteem is replaced by something deeper and more real. I have found that I am able to surrender to many things, but there are some things that I still struggle with. In particular, my pain body still reacts vigorously to injustice of all kinds, particularly abuse of power and cruelty to animals. And people who still insist on saving seats here at the front of the hall with their books or clothing, despite being requested not to do so. And it's always the same people. So I won't talk about the last part of the question. It's enough that I read it. But the first part... Oh, forgot. Reacting to injustice of all kinds, particularly abuse of power, cruelty to animals. Well... Wherever you look on this planet, you'll find it in one form or another. You will find violence and cruelty and injustice and abuse of power and corruption perpetrated by humans against other humans. Against children, animals, against nature, against the planet itself. Just, you would be overwhelmed if you knew what is happening on the planet, even at this moment, what humans are doing to other humans, even at this moment. And it's been going on ever since. Anybody can remember recorded history and beyond. And of course there are certain pockets where that is particularly pronounced or marked. So wherever you look, you see that unconsciousness, humans, so identified with their form, that they are totally trapped in it, so identified with the mental form of me, that other forms are dead. They have deadened their sensitivity through identification with mind-made images, so they don't know what they are doing to other humans because they have reduced other humans to mere labels, mental labels. They have attached judgments, images, and labels onto other humans. And now, anything is possible, any act of violence, through conceptualizing other human beings. And what you do to others, you do to yourself. So in the case of certain, let's say, and this is only one example, terrorists is one example, but respectable scientists working on chemical weapons, and so it's another, there's no end to it. But let's just, how can a terrorist commit an act, kill thousands of people? Well, before he can do it, he has to reduce those human beings to a mental concept. He has to attach a label to them, and that's what he does. In the case of Muslim terrorists, and it's not confined to that religion, Christians did many similar things a few hundred years ago. They would kill anybody who they could label as heretic or whatever label they had, didn't quite believe what we believe. Kill him. The terrorists, just to put the label of unbeliever onto a group of people, for some who are so identified with mind, that's just that simple label already deadens, they have reduced these human beings to a mental concept, and they are now called unbelievers. Once you have reduced human beings to a concept, you can do anything to them and won't sense and feel it anymore. It's a tiny example. And so you're so identified with a form, totally identified with a form, that all other forms are alien to you. And you can do anything to them, to use them, or in fear, try to kill them because they might do something to you. So really, it's a total identification with conceptual identity, which you manufacture for yourself and for others. And so you don't know the aliveness that is there. You don't know that anymore, because you inhabit a conceptual reality. And that conceptual reality is amplified, the madness of that is amplified by the pain that you carry inside, that's been there for so long, the pain body, that energizes and amplifies the already mad conceptual reality. So all the pain flows into those mental concepts, and then any act of violence is possible, or exploitation. What you're doing to the planet, they don't know. When they see a forest totally identified with mind, it's immediately labeled as, they see only timber, perhaps, and how much it costs. They look at it through their mental conditioning. They don't see that the aliveness that is there, the sacredness that is there in an ancient forest, because when they walk into the forest, immediately everything is labeled according to what they want from the forest. because there is not a single space of freedom from their mind, the sensitivity is lost completely. They don't know where they are, who they are, what this is. It's total ignorance. And so, wherever you look on the planet, humans are manifesting that degree of unconsciousness. That's what it is. Now, of course you could feel angry about it, you could feel sad about it, you can feel upset about it. It's only normal, isn't it? But you look through it and see also here the impersonal nature of what is being done. Not to manufacture an identity for those people or groups of people or tribes or religions, doesn't matter, not to make an identity out of the manifestation of unconsciousness and say, that's who they are. They are evil. That is their nature. It's what it may look like that when you look at it on the surface. But ultimately, all evil reveals itself as total identification with form, which implies total identification with mind. Complete absence of an observing presence, witness, not the slightest gap, you're totally in mind. And so, of course, it is tempting to make that into an identity. You can do it for yourself, too, because you can look back on your life at a time when you were less conscious than you are now, and you may have done certain things in your life when you were younger to other people. You may have failed to do something that you should have done, perhaps in relation to your children, whatever it may be. So you may have done something or failed to do something that now you see as bad. It is very tempting and to incorporate this, which after all was only the manifestation of human unconsciousness through this form. It's very tempting to make an identity for yourself out of that and say, I did that, that was me. Then it's going to incorporate it into the unpleasant story of me. It becomes part of the mind-created image of who I am. So and the ego will hang on even to that. Anything that gives food to strengthen your identity, your mind-made identity, the ego, which is the mind-made self, will grasp that. And it will happily grasp at guilt. Because guilt is to identify yourself with the movement of unconsciousness that happened through this form and say, that was my identity, me. I did that, me. So it gives you, it strengthens enormously your mind-made sense of self. And this is why it's hard when you do not look through that mechanism. People find it hard to get rid of guilt, the feeling that I am bad because I did that. And so they don't see, they make an identity for themselves out of something that was the expression of human unconsciousness. And the same thing for others. You can do it to others, say that is who they are. And then you may begin to want to fight those people because you must fight evil. So you get drawn into having enemies. You create enemies, and it looks so just. It is a just cause, but you are attacking. And without knowing it, you get very subtly drawn into unconsciousness through attacking unconsciousness, manifestations of unconsciousness. Very subtly you get drawn into that yourself. It does not mean that you cannot take action in order to remedy certain manifestations of unconsciousness, but all that is secondary to getting to the root of human unconsciousness, which of course is in each one. Getting to the root of it in yourself as mind identification, becoming free of that. Then you can also, of course, you can at the same time also do good where you see it's needed, help people, yes, but being careful that you don't create enemies to fight. This will draw you into unconsciousness. And before you know it, you do the same things that those people that you're fighting against. So to see then also here the non-personal nature of human dysfunction, of human madness, they are simply through those forms what is being expressed is the human condition in its present evolutionary stage, which is coming to an end, this stage, fortunately. But you see it still everywhere. So don't make it into an identity, nor for an identity for yourself about something that you did once, nor something that you observe in others. And that's called forgiveness. Forgiveness means not to mistake human unconsciousness for who that human being is. The opposite of forgiveness is to make that mistake. So forgiveness is simply to see through that and see the true meaning of forgiveness, that there is nothing to forgive. That is the true meaning of forgiveness. It's all contained in, because we have this beautiful, that image of the cross and Jesus that contains so much wisdom, that you could all in contained in that image. And it's all contained in the last words of Jesus, which were, "Forgive them, for they know not what they do." He did not make an identity for those people out of what they did to him. Now, "they know not what they do" means, in modern terminology, they are unconscious. So if he had lived now, he probably would have said, "they are completely unconscious. It's okay. They don't know." So forgiveness arises as you stop manufacturing mind-created identities for people. And then you become a manifestation of a different consciousness in this world. And your presence is then enough to change the world, because that transformation of consciousness has already happened within you. Very tempting. That non-forgiveness is very tempting, and its mind and its ego. Similarly, your parents, you might find you may still have some resentment, some of you. They expressed human unconsciousness. They didn't have a choice. it looks as if they had a choice. But that comes only in with presence. And that's the choice to be free of mind.